It's time now for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
No, this isn't Mae. This is Bill Kasing, and I'm going to be her guest this evening, and she'll be back with you next week. Now, for those of you that are recording this broadcast, this is number 471, January 18th, 1981, and this is side one for the tape cassettes. Well, I'll introduce myself. My name is Bill Kasing. I'm a freelance writer, and for about the past 7 years, I've been investigating what I consider is a massive conspiracy, that of the fact that we didn't really send men to the moon. My claim is that the Apollo adventures were simply a gigantic $30 billion hoax. I've written a book about it called We Never Went to the Moon, and that's what we're going to get into this evening. Now, we've got a message here from Mae. She reports that John Muir, or Weir, technologist and engineer for the Hughes Organization, held a press conference in Vancouver, British Columbia this week. Muir stated three things that have now been covered in the Vancouver, B.C. newspapers. One, Howard Hughes is not buried in Texas. The Howard Hughes Organization later named Summa Corporation, which includes the Hughes Aircraft Company and the Hughes Medical Institute, and claimed that it's nothing but a cover for the CIA. In fact, it is the CIA. And three, the CIA works illegally in Canada. And as Mae says, she published an article for Playgirl called Is Howard Hughes Dead and Buried Off a Greek Island? In 1976, on Good Morning America with Robert Hartman, she reported the same message. She stated that Vance Cooper is buried in that unmarked grave in Texas. Now, next week, Mae is going to go into the Hughes hoax with you, the meaning of this massive deception. And now we're going to get back to myself and the moon hoax. Most people, when they're interested in what I have to say, ask me when I got started on the moon hoax. And I began this study in 1974 when I was living on my boat, and some people wanted to know what I thought about the government. In essence, what was my real opinion? And I said, well, my feeling was that the government itself was a gigantic hoax. And someone popped up and they said, well, Bill, you were in the space program. Do you think that we really went to the moon? And I said, no, I really don't think so. And so they said, why don't you write a book about it? And I said, that's a good idea. And I more or less did it as a spoof. So I sat down and I wrote an outline and I sent it off to a publisher, and sure enough, I got a contract back, and I went off to Las Vegas to write the book. And in the process of writing the book, I began to uncover things that just weren't right. For example, I discovered that a man by the name of Thomas Ronald Barron had been employed by North American Aviation. And he was very, very, let's say, diligent about his work, and he kept a record of everything that went wrong with the Apollo program. And after the three astronauts were burned to death in 1967, he came before a congressional investigating committee and testified that the whole Apollo project was simply a big scam. And in so doing, he got himself killed. About 3 days after he testified, he was found dead in his automobile at a railway crossing. What I'd like to do now for the rest of the broadcast, since I work best on sort of a dialogue basis, is more or less have questions asked to me by the various people in the studio. We have Matthew here, Roger, who is a DJ, and I'm going to let him start off to sort of play devil's advocate with me and ask me questions about the moon hoax. Roger?
Well, I think The first thing that pops into my head is probably the most general question, that the covering up something as massive as the United States' supposed landing on the moon seems to me a project almost as difficult as landing on the moon to begin with. How can could something like this have been kept such a closely guarded secret? I mean, the entire country was involved.
That's a very, very good question. And, you know, I've actually thought about that many, many times. I've wondered, why would they pull a hoax off when it would be almost as easy to just go to the moon? But here's the thing. Having spent time in the aerospace industry, I know that at the time that they wanted to go to the moon, it was technically impossible. In other words, the technology to actually send men to the moon hadn't been developed. So they really had no choice. They simply had to fake it. So they did the best they could in faking it. But as I point out in my book, they left a lot of things that were sort of unanswered. And I think I left you some questions there if you'd like to answer, ask some of those.
Well, let's see here. Yeah, there's some very interesting questions here. For instance, the moon rocks that which I was fascinated by. Why were the moon rocks rushed to Switzerland right after they landed? What proof is there that they are actually rocks from the moon? That is interesting. All right. We have a minor difficulty. If we could, you think maybe you're not feeling well. You think maybe we should take a break?
I think there's very little air in here.
Yeah. All right.
Take a little break.
All right. Matthew, how about some music to fill up the interim?
Just a little bit of thought and effort will help save many gallons of water in your home. Take shorter showers or take a bath using a partially filled tub. Don't use the toilet as a wastebasket. Don't let the water run while brushing your teeth or while washing vegetables or dishes. A message from your Monterey Peninsula Water Management District. KLRB, Carmel by the Sea.
Explain to the audience that every Sunday I have a fast and to cleanse my system, and apparently it left me just a little bit weak and underpowered, and when I walked into the studio it was very warm in here, and a combination of no food and a warm room just kind of did it to me. So anyway, I'm back here talking to Roger, and the usual way that I present my program is in a dialogue form. In other words, I seem to respond best when someone acts as a devil's advocate. In other words, challenges me, just as he did a moment ago when he said, wasn't it as difficult to pull off the moon hoax as it was to actually go to the moon? And then, of course, I went on to explain that technically they couldn't do it. They simply had to fake it. So I'll bounce back to Roger again and field another question from him.
Well, I was going to ask about the moon rocks. As a matter of fact, I did. But on going back to the first comment, that, in other words, you feel that it was done, the hoax was perpetrated to avoid losing face, that we had to match the Russians, granted, all right, if we didn't have the technology to do it, why didn't we just say so and drop the whole thing? Why was it necessary to continue with the hoax?
That's a very good question. In fact, that's one that I'm most commonly asked by moderators when I do the radio and TV broadcasts. The reason that we had to go ahead with the hoax was this. First of all, President Kennedy more or less committed the United States to go to the moon within about a 10-year period. He said, before the end of the decade, we will land men on the moon. Now, by making that commitment, he more or less committed all of American technology, our expertise. And remember that since America is is governed and controlled and manipulated and ruled by these giant corporations, they did not want to appear second best. They certainly didn't want to take 12 years to get to the moon or 15 years. They wanted to do it within the time schedule. In addition, there was what I claim it was a phony race between America and Russia in trying to get to the moon by the end of the decade. Actually, my research has indicated that the Russians never entertained the idea of landing men on the moon because in 1954 they did some studies that revealed that the surface of the moon is so heavily assailed with cosmic radiation, solar radiation, temperature extremes, micrometeorites, that a human being to survive there would need a space suit made of solid lead about 3 feet thick, or he'd die. So I would say generally that what we're looking at is the fact that we had to do something by the end of the 60s. We had committed ourselves. American technological prestige was at stake, and there was no way that they could weasel out of it. In other words, they were committed. They had to do it.
All right. Going back to the moon suits and so forth. Now, as I recall, at the turn of the 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century, with the advent of the automobile and so on and so forth, there were a number of very well-respected people who said that man could not survive speeds in excess of 30 miles an hour because the blood would be dragged to the back of his head and he would die. Now, isn't it possible that our idea of the dangers and the hazards of the surface of the moon were something along the same line, that we simply were guessing where we didn't really know yet?
Well, that's possible, but then again, considering that they were able to land Surveyor on the moon, I don't question that achievement. Prior to the alleged moon landings, they did drop a couple of Surveyor-instrumented, what would you call it, mechanical reporting units on the surface of the moon. And it's my belief that these units merely substantiated the Russian discoveries that the lunar surface was lethal to a human being. So that I think your point is well taken, Roger, that landing on the moon may have been analogous to this we can't go more than 30 miles an hour or else we die sort of thing. But on the other hand, I think that that the Russian studies, corroborated by the Surveyor broadcasts back to Earth, would pretty much substantiate my contention that, that the lunar surface really is lethal. And much more protection would have been needed. For example, micrometeorites hitting the surface of the moon at 30,000 miles per hour. Any one of these would have punctured not only the suit, but it would have gone right through the astronauts and killed them.
The conditions you've stated for the lethal nature of the surface of the moon would seem to apply also to the conditions found in open space between planetary objects. Are you contending then that we never have left the atmosphere of the planet, that the extravehicular activity in orbit we saw was also faked?
Well, I have sort of mixed feelings about that, Roger. I have a friend who claims that we never even orbited the Earth. In other words, that even John Glenn and Grissom and Shepard and so forth actually never did orbit because of the danger of micrometeorites and because of cosmic radiation and just the tremendous dangers fraught that are fraught in any environment other than our own terrestrial one. There's a very interesting point that could be brought up here, and that is that a man by the name of Lloyd Mallon was more or less doing the same thing I've been doing towards NASA, only he was doing it toward the Russian space exploits. And he proved back in the late 60s, in fact, two articles were published in a national magazine claiming that the Russians never really orbited the Earth, that Yuri Gagarin and others actually, those were total fakes. And he proved this by means of analyzing Russian space photography and Russian reports. And it's interesting to note that Malin died of cancer in 1973, and it's my feeling that at that time he was beginning to analyze too diligently and too carefully the American exploits. And maybe he got a little bit too much radiation one of those times. Who knows?
On the subject of photography, going through some of the information you've given me here, that you make a very strong point that in all the photographs of the lunar surface and the vehicles in transit and so forth, all of the pictures taken in space, or basically in space, show no stars in the night sky. That, as you pointed out to me earlier,
right,
that without the atmosphere of the Earth to blanket out and dim these stars, it would be a very brilliant show, and it's unusual that none of the photographs show that. Maybe you could...
Yeah, I'd like to dwell on that, because I tell you, I think, Roger, that's one of the most important points I have. Take, for example, the moment when Neil Armstrong actually, or allegedly, as I claim, stepped out of the lunar module. Now, his first comment, of course, was, "This is one small step for man and a great leap for mankind." Shortly after that, he began talking about the surface of the moon. Now, my feeling is that when he stepped down on the moon's surface and looked up at the sky, in other words, the universe, he would have been absolutely, you know, amazed at the beauty of billions of stars shining with an intensity unknown on Earth. The only time we get anything even close to that is when we're out in the desert, far from any cities, and we see the Milky Way blazing in the sky, and we see the planets, all the celestial bodies, without much haze or interference. But imagine on the moon, where there is no atmosphere, these stars would shine without any wavering, without any glittering. In other words, they wouldn't twinkle. They would simply appear like locomotive headlights, just glaring down, billions, trillions of them. The far distant galaxies, you know, would just glow. The nebula would appear. And, of course, consider, too, that Saturn, Jupiter, the large planets would have been very visible. The rings of Saturn, for example, would have been visible. And yet not one astronaut in all of the alleged six voyages to the moon has ever commented on the beauty of the universe. Now, that to me is a very, very strong point. Plus, and here's my clincher for that, why, when they claim that they went to the moon and they took all kinds of equipment along, why didn't they take a camera set up and get the most magnificent photographs of the universe that could ever have been obtained?
That is an interesting point. You must have fielded these same questions to NASA officials or to somebody who should be in the know. Did they have any sort of answers for these questions?
Well, they so many people have heard my broadcasts and have written NASA that NASA, I think in 1977, they prepared a four-page mimeographed handout that answers a couple of the questions that I have posed to NASA. As far as answering, for example, the question that I just posed, why didn't the astronauts comment on the stars and why didn't they take magnificent photos, they've never bothered to answer those kind of questions at all. There's a dead silence when I pose questions like, why didn't the lunar module engine carve out a crater, a significant crater, below the rocket motor thrust chamber when it landed on the moon? In none of the pictures of the lunar module on the moon is there any evidence whatsoever that the engine was emitting this 30,000-pound thrust jet blast to blast away all of the loose sand and dirt. The surface of the moon is supposed to be so loose that a footprint shows up very clearly. Well, with that kind of loose sand, certainly the jet blast, which is far greater, well, maybe not greater, but certainly the equivalent of the jet blast from, say, a 747, why wouldn't it have blasted the sand and lunar dust away from the landing site below the engine? I feel that's
that is an interesting point, that you've got some great photographs here. Too bad we're not on television. that show exactly what you're talking about. The surface beneath the module is totally flat and seemingly undisturbed. That is interesting. And I was going to be an astronaut when I was a kid, too.
Yeah, here's another shot here. I'm showing one here to Roger that allegedly...
Just peek over my shoulder. You know.
Okay. This allegedly shows Colonel Aldrin on the moon, and in the background is the lunar module, and the motor thrust chamber is plainly in view, and there's no interruption or disruption of the surface of the moon below the engine whatsoever. And yet their footprints show very, very clearly in all the other photographs.
Yes. All right. What about some of the other evidences they brought back? The moon rocks. What did happen to the moon rocks? Where are they, and what was done with them?
Well, that's an excellent question, too. I always say that they really only have three modes of proof. The alleged photographs, the moon rocks, and, of course, the statements of the astronauts. Nothing else really is of any significant proof. The rocks, I claim, did not come from the moon. They were manufactured on Earth in a NASA ceramics laboratory where they can get temperatures up to molten rock. And they could have very easily created almost any type of mineral, any shape, size, any appearance. And since no one else has ever seen a moon rock, how possibly could anybody say these are authentic or these are not authentic? I mean, I can't, you can't, no scientist can. And yet, of course, we have photographs of moon rocks, and allegedly there are moon rock samples available to scientists, but who knows? That's a great mystery that certainly bears further investigation.
Well, it seems to me, I was reading an article in, I believe, Omni magazine not too long ago, that some of the moon rocks have been lost. Some of them are still in storage.
Right.
And some of them have been stored they were sent to various institutions to be studied, but have never been taken out of storage. They're locked away and they're sealed in nitrogen or something
right.
of the sort.
Right.
And never have been shown. That is interesting. You make another comment here, if I can find it, about the lack of mention of gold, silver, diamonds, and other precious metals and minerals on the moon. That I had assumed that the possibility of mining the moon and seeking this out as to replenish our fading natural resources was one of the major reasons for going. Why was no mention ever made of this?
Well, of course, my claim is, since they didn't go to the moon, they really had nothing to report, and they didn't even dare to hypothesize, let's say, the existence of precious stones such as diamonds or perhaps the existence of gold. In other words, Roger, what we're looking at is minimal information. Minimal photography. In other words, just enough to get by, just enough to try to prove their case to the great mass of people who will accept photographs and rocks as being the gospel. But beyond that, there's really very little information. We can get into a little bit more of that as soon as we flip sides on the tape. We're going to take a little break now so that the people who are recording this can flip their cassettes over. So I'll turn this back to Matthew for a moment.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.